Hi, welcome to another edition of Mama Making a Movie Podcast. Happy New Year to all our patrons listening out there. We've got lots to get into today. We'll be looking at more trailers. We've got the best and worst of Mr. Tom Hardy's film catalogue. A review of the films we recommend to each other on episode one. Some streaming picks for you guys. More on our murder mystery movie we're attempting to bring to life. And finally, we'll have our picks for each other for the following week. So that's everything we've got for you guys today. I'm going to pass it straight over to my co-hosts, my BFFs, Fergus and Gogan. Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I don't know if the mic is picking up that tear. I just, single tear I shed down my cheek about that BFF comment, but I hope it did. But yeah, look, happy Christmas, everybody.
Happy Christmas, guys.
It's a bit of a special episode as well. We were all trying to get together. Unfortunately, look, things not permitting, coronavirus rules. But look, it turned out two of us got together. It's a little, still slightly half special. It's not going to be the full shebang, the three of us together, but it's the first time two of us are together recording.
Getting closer.
You know what, let's just hammer straight into it, right? Yeah. I'd say, right, Gogan, if you want to kick us off with some trailers, what was your trailer that you picked?
I picked Ghostbusters Afterlife, which is looking to hit cinemas in summer 2021. Looks fantastic. Great cast. Starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd. So it's Finn Wolfhard as well from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
And Paul Rudd. So beautiful cast. Jason Reitman is the director. I think he did Juno as well. I'll just give you a quick breakdown of it. When a single mom and her two kids arrive in a small town, they begin to discover their connection to the original Ghostbusters and the secret legacy that their grandfather left behind.
What are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke. And the only thing that's left in our name is this creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere.
Why'd you bring me up here?
Entertainment value.
What is that?
I don't know.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
Under the dining table, now!
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
I found this in my living room.
Whoa, killer replica.
A replica of what?
A ghost trap? There hasn't been a ghost sighting in 30 years. New York in the 80s, it's like The Walking Dead. Your dad never mentioned this to you?
It's just my mom. My grandfather died. My mom says we're just here to pick through the rubble of his life.
Overall, this trailer has a bit of everything in it. Really looks... I'm going to make the connection with Stranger Things again. It actually looks like if Stranger Things could be made a movie and maybe brought down a PG level, it looks like something that everyone can get behind.
Yeah, nice.
I really like the look of it. Looks like there's good budget behind it as well. So like in terms of the CGI, could be quite good. I'm excited for it, definitely. You never know. Like, I mean, obviously the last one was an absolute shambles. A disaster of a film.
It could not be anything worse.
I don't think
than
you can get worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The hashtag Me Too people on the line here, guys. Tread lightly with
that. It is absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it's an all female cast. I watched the film with really high hopes. I love Bridesmaids. All those actresses that are in it, I thought like this could be good.
Yeah.
It was just a bad film.
Just didn't work.
Can I ask you, is Dan Aykroyd the only original cast member that's billed?
Do we think there's going to be Bill Murray?
Bill Murray,
he's listed. He doesn't feature in the trailer.
I'm pretty sure Egon is dead. Is Egon dead? The original Egon actor?
Yeah, Harold Ramis is
dead. Yeah, like for the trailer, I am trying to figure out. Okay, who is their grandfather here? Is
one? I assume
one, is he alive? Two, has he passed away? Because there is a few comments of the grandfather passed away, or maybe he's just in hiding from the Ghostbusters legacy that he has left behind. You know, he just doesn't want to be. be found. But again, that's me digging way too much into the trailer.
I assume that it's going to be Egon, like maybe like a tribute to him because the actor is dead.
I think his anniversary came up quite recently as well. I think the fans did something to celebrate his anniversary last December.
Is there any Hudson going to be in it? He played Winston.
I didn't see him listed. So again, I don't know if that's a kind of angle they're going with. What kind of airtime does Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd have?
Hopefully a lot,
exactly. But I have a feeling it'll be focused more on the kids' side of things.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Poor, have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, I've seen the trailer. I'm also looking forward to it as well. I think it could be really good, really fun summer movie if we can get to the cinema to see it. But a little fact, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. Jason Reitman is the son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the originals, I think.
Wow. Oh, really, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think so. Or nephew or something,
Yeah, that'd be something well looking into. I suppose if we could.
I fucking love the originals, they're brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone's around at Christmas as well, aren't they? Like
the second one was on Stevenson's Day. I haven't watched them all the way through in years, like from start to finish. But I remember, I think I much prefer the first one.
Absolutely. I like the second one. The second one is one of those ones that, like, I probably say this a lot in the podcast. It's like, I'm the youngest in my family by, like, you know, a good few years. So I was exposed to a lot of, like, older films. But, like, I would have saw that film quite young. And the second one, the painting, you know, Vigo!
Oh, my God, yeah.
Fucking terrifying. Absolutely terrified the shit out of me.
But I do think, I suppose, coming back to one of the points I said there is the CGI, I think if you're going to remake an 80s movie or add to an 80s movie, you know, we've seen it before with some of the other movies that we're probably going to talk about. A lot of the effects were just absolutely fantastic. So I am really looking forward to it.
Yeah. If I was to ask you, Butler, what would you give it? Since we usually go by Rotten Tomatoes scores, if you were going a percentage, Butler, what would you say it might come out as?
I'd say about a 74%. I think it should be a good one.
You're leaving yourself a bit of wiggle room there, I suppose. What do you think?
I like the look of it. 90%.
90%.
It won't be to everyone's liking.
Yeah.
You know,
if you do it right, though, this is the thing. It's the thing with these kind of 80s films. If you can do a remake right, you're hitting the parents who were kids when the film first came out.
Yeah.
You're hitting them with the nostalgia, and if the film is done right, they'll love it. And then their kids love it as well. So you're drawing that balance. And I think,
like Star Wars.
Yeah, like Star Wars, exactly. Like, I mean, I think the big thing, you know, I know it's not a movie, but The Mandalorian has come out as
just finished
a big standout. Amazing, by the way. Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's come out as a big standout for the Star Wars nerds of the 70s and 80s. They're like, my kids love it, I love it. It's got the right amount of fan service mixed with some childhood stuff for them. Like, I mean, I think obviously The Phantom Menace is like a thing that I love, but I mean, it really pissed a lot of older fans off.
I would actually disagree with Star Wars. I think they got it right for maybe one or two of the movies. A lot of the other ones, I think...
The most recent Star Wars, I think, are garbage.
Yeah, I think they've got it wrong. Yeah. But you look at The Mandalorian, it's absolutely fantastic. Oh,
they've got it so spot on. This is what annoys me about the most recent Star Wars films. I liked the first one. The second two, especially the last one, absolute pile of shit. Like,
so just bad.
Filled with irrelevant characters. And do you know, look, we digress. Yeah. We're going off topic here.
Anyway,
this could be a whole podcast.
I regret bringing it up entirely.
I'm going to go in as high as an 83.
Thank you very much.
Because, look, Butler, we'll move on to you. What's your trailer?
I went with the Tom Hanks movie, News of the World. Basically, it's already out. It came out on Christmas Day there. And if you have Netflix in the US of A or China, they start streaming that straight away. Basically, the plot is Tom Hanks plays he's like a newsman of sorts. And he goes from town to town in the Old West. And he reads out newspapers of stuff that's happening all around the world. And people can pay like 5 cents and listen to him talk about what's going on in the world. And on his way to a different town, he encounters a child. She was kidnapped years ago by like Native Americans, and Tom Hanks essentially rescues her. She doesn't want to leave, but he essentially rescues her, and he promises to bring her to a family. And so it's kind of like this journey across the Old West, where they encounter, you know, like bandits, harsh terrain,
and it's kind of Tom Hanks' promise I'll kind of bring her to a new family.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd, and I'm here tonight to read the news from across this great world of ours.
So they pay you to tell stories.
I ain't never heard of that as a thing a man can do.
Well, it's not a rich man's occupation, as you can see.
Hey! Stop! Stop! I'm not gonna hurt you! Do you understand English?
Oh, yeah, I call but,
friend.
It says your name is Johanna Leonberger. Indians took you when they attacked your family 6 years prior. Your mother, father, and sister were... well, they passed. She's got family down in Castroville.
Captain, why are you doing this?
She needs to laugh and dream. She needs new memories.
Road's closed.
Is that the law?
It is now.
Word is she's that captive out of Wichita Falls.
What do you want?
How much you want for her?
This child is not for sale.
She thinks she's an Indian now.
She's something in between. Ladies and gentlemen, these are stories of men and women very much like you, waiting for better days to come.
You can't have her! And I'm taking her home!
It looks like a classic Tom Hanks movie in that, as a few guys ever, like, if you think about it, any movie he's in that's really good, he plays an average man put under exceptional circumstances of pressure. Saving Private Ryan, Castaway, Captain Phillips. He's very perfect at playing, like, I'm just a guy down the road, but if I rise to the challenge, I could be the all-American hero of sorts. And this will be as well. Paul Greengrass is the director. He did like Born on Tomato in 1993 and stuff. And as a modern Western, which we don't get enough of these days, as we talked about before, Fergus, I mean, I think the best Western of all time is The Assassination of Jesse James. And, you know, that came out in 2007 or something. People might go, how dare you, it's Rio Bravo, it's The Wild Bunch, it's Magnificent Seven. And even the remake of 3:10 to Yuma is fantastic as well. So with capabilities in Hollywood now and the great writing and acting there really should be more Westerns, and Tom Hanks finally dip his toe into the Western pool. I think it makes like a really good mix. I would give it, for a trailer, it looks enticing enough. I'd give it about a 7 out of 10. My only thing is it plays on the heartstrings a bit too much in the trailer, but I'm keen to see it, and it'll be one of those Oscar movies where it'll be getting a few nominations, but I don't think it'll be taking home any awards. But I think it could be a very solid watch. Have you guys watched the trailer?
I actually didn't get a chance to watch the trailer, to be honest.
I've seen it.
Did you see it?
I that's a great point to reference at the end, Butler, that you say it kind of goes into heartstrings a bit too much. I found myself watching the trailer at the start being like, this looks amazing. And by the time I got to the end of the trailer, I was like, you know what? Have I seen too much of the movie in the trailer?
What year is this set, Butler?
Wild West, so you're talking maybe the 1870s.
Right. There's no truth to this at all? Or
no, it's based on the News of the World, a book by a woman called Paulette Giles, and that was released in 2016. Standard adaption of a novel.
I don't know, it just didn't pop into my head, but like when I hear News of the World, I'm like, they're making a film about the News of the World newspaper. Why would you put Tom Hanks in it? I thought that was an English paper.
Yeah, it's very misleading title. The guy's a superstar. He's endlessly a box office draw. Yeah. I think this one will steadily be, even like COVID times, I think it'll do okay.
He's one of those people though, isn't he? It's like, I mean, he's very bankable. Like,
and then he's got the Elvis movie coming out next year, and a movie called Bio is coming out where him and this robot are the last people on Earth, and he teaches the robot how to look after his dog because he's terminally ill. I mean, take my money.
Sign me up for that.
It was essentially, when you were finishing that sentence, I thought it was going a certain way, but it's kind of like, you know, what I thought you were going to say. It's like, basically, Tom Hanks teaches this robot how to love. Essentially.
That's
I think it's an intention, isn't it? Like, where Ron Howard's coming up with the idea for the film. Howard, you've done it again! give us a predicted Rotten Tomatoes score.
I think it's already on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's in the 80s. But I could be wrong, let me.
When what's the release?
89%.
Is it coming out in the cinema here, or how's it coming out here?
I think that was the plan. Netflix bought the rights to it, and they were already showing it in America and China, so it might get released here on Netflix. If not, it's going on to video on demand soon. But it was planned for a theater release here, but I don't know if that still happens.
I mean, we actually got a special shout out from a fan. I actually didn't want to tell you until we got on here. A little boy from Kingswood. His name is Benjamin Foran. He said that I really love your podcast a lot. You guys are the bestest. Hold on, sorry. What? He's what? Sorry, someone's giving me a note here. He's actually a 29-year-old man. It's a lot creepier than I originally thought. But Ben, thanks for listening.
That's the last time we do a Make-A-Wish for a 29-year-old man, I'll tell you that much.
So, Ferg, I believe it's back to you then for your trailer breakdown. What do you have this week?
So, I believe this is one we've all seen. My trailer is The Little Things. The trailer doesn't really give that much away in terms of that.
Which is great.
I like. Deputy Sheriff Joe Deacon, which is played by Denzel Washington. Basically, he goes to a city. He's there to pick up some evidence for a different case, but he kind of gets mixed up in this case, and it's to do with a serial killer who's terrorizing the city. Department Sergeant there, Jim Baxter, who's played by Remy Malek, he basically kind of enlists him to help him. Like, the trailer itself, I thought was really good. And then the trailer doesn't give too much away. The thing that the trailer does give away is that Jared Leto is like, he's like the kind of, what I imagine is the prime suspect.
You know him, didn't you? Then you had that one little feeling. But you waved it away. You should have listened to that one little feeling. Just like I'm listening to you now. You can talk to me. I'm all a friend you got.
You're not exactly a department favorite. Things probably changed a lot since you left.
You still gotta catch him, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Not that much has changed then, huh?
I can assure you all, we are taking a 24/7 all hands on deck approach to these cases.
The guy's a shark. If he stops, he dies. He likes to drive, probably has a decent car, maybe two, high mileage.
He must really like my car.
I do. How's the trunk space?
Something I gotta know. How's a guy with the best clearance rate in the department work 15 years without a promotion?
Maybe I didn't go to the right church.
When I look in your eyes, what I see, it ain't good.
He knew all the details, but he wasn't within 10 miles of the killing.
Why is that? Why is that?
How's the trunk space?
What do you want?
I want to nail the bastard.
For who?
For all of the girls he killed.
I want to nail them too. Difference is, I'm doing it for me. It's the little things, Jimmy. It's the little things that rip you apart. It's the little things that get you caught.
As far as trailer goes, the music is great in it. It's really dark, it's gritty. I'm a bit suspicious of it, if I'm honest. I'm not overly excited. But like basically it's like cops from a local sheriff from another city comes into Los Angeles to collect evidence. He gets embroiled up with this kind of like local detective who basically, you know, gets him in on his case. We're looking for a serial killer. You've got this great record. Help us out with this. Denzel Washington seems to be some sort of genius at solving cases, even though he's still a uniformed cop and he you know, hasn't moved up. There's something to do with that. Like, the trailer alludes to the fact that there's some reason why Denzel Washington's character hasn't moved up. You know what I mean? Why are you still a uniformed cop? Why aren't you a detective? Why aren't you a sergeant? You know, why aren't you the sheriff? He's the deputy sheriff, but he's not the sheriff. But I don't know. Look, you've got Rami Malek, you've got Denzel Washington, and you've got Jared Leto. Three Oscar winners, right? On paper, this looks amazing. The trailer looks really good. But like the last trailer with the News of the World, towards the end, I was like, this is starting to look a little cheesy.
One of the points I'd actually say to you there is as well, by the end of the trailer, I was thinking, this is a great trailer. It doesn't give too much away. But then the first thing I say when I watch a trailer that doesn't give too much away is, has it actually given away everything it could possibly give away? And is this just going to be the movie? Is it just going to be a slow burner where nothing really happens from start to finish?
Like, this is,
and we've seen it. Out of the Furnace comes back again, as I mentioned.
That was the next comment.
That's what happened.
I mean, this is the thing. Like, I mean, look, it looks very stylish. It looks really well shot. You know, I love this kind of type of film, but there hasn't been a good film like this. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's been really enough of a good film since Seven. I just think Seven set the bar so high.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this kind of gritty, dark serial killer film. I really thought when I first watched this trailer, I thought this could be it. I rewatched it and I was like,
It could still be.
When I get to the point I was going to make, and you think, like, look, there's three Oscar winners in it, you think it's going to be great, but as Goldman said, Out of the Furnace, and you know, I mentioned this in like a previous practice broadcast, and I went on an absolute, like, maybe like a half an hour rant about how bad it was, but it had a great cast. It had Christian Bale, Forest Whitaker, it had Woody Harrelson, it had Casey Affleck. And it was god awful. And like Gogan said, it went nowhere. It went absolutely nowhere. It was shite.
That's the worry that you're going to have.
You know, so I'm really worried about this film. I'm actually, you know, initially when I picked this trailer, I was like, I'm going to put this in a high category, but I'm actually going to put this quite low down. I'm going to give this a 48%.
Wow, that's low.
I think it's going to be poor. And that's judging by... And I think Jared Leto's a fabulous actor, but I think he's been picking the wrong roles lately. Ergo, Suicide Squad.
Trailer for Morpheus looks diabolical. Have you seen it?
Morpheus looks poor as well. And I think he's picking the wrong kind of roles. I think he's a fantastic actor.
This could be a Sager film now as well at the same time. You can pick up an Oscar
for this. It's like, as you said, right? Okay, in the trailer, you know, you see, you get all three characters. Rami Malek's fantastic. I don't know if he's the right
pick
because his character is supposed to be like quite a high up detective sergeant. He's the department sergeant, and his name is Jim Baxter. And you're like, I don't see you as a detective, Jim Baxter. I see you as more of a... Rami Malek has that young face. He's got that forever young look. And I see him as someone who's like, someone that's come in. They're like Training Day or something. You've just come into the department.
Yeah.
You're just come into the FBI. You're trying to make your name, and you're the big character in it. But you're not the older, you know, gruff main character. Where
the Denzel.
I'm interested to see how it goes.
Yeah. What
did you think, Blair?
Can I say on it? Like, initially, I thought the same as you. Like, oh, this great cast. There's a lot of potential. Two things that troll me about it is, first, I think it's a HBO Max movie, and they've just started a streaming service, so I feel like it's one of these, like, let's get three big Oscar winners in, this will sign a lot of people up, doesn't necessarily have to be the best film in the world. And then I feel like I haven't seen the film, haven't looked at anything into the deep plot of it. But obviously, from the trailer, it's clear as day, if you watch the trailer, that they're framing Jared Leto as a serial killer, because it's Rami Malek partnered with Denzel Washington, and he always has that kind of creepiness about him. I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a half-lane twist in this film where it turns out Rami Malek is either the killer or in cahoots with the killer, because I feel like they're kind of they're going out of their way so much to try to, like, Jared Leto's the killer. I feel like it's kind of like I feel there's a stupid twist in this film coming down the line somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I thought the same thing. Is it going to be Malik? And like, is it going to be Denzel Washington? In my mind, from the trailer and from the synopsis and from what I've read about it, I can't piece together what the meat and bones of this film are going to be. And that worries me.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
That's fair.
It's also intriguing to watch. Like, I mean, the fact you don't know what the film's going to be, whether it's good or bad, at least that might entice you in.
Oh no, I'm still going to watch it because I I'm giving it a low score because I've been hurt before. So, you know, hurt me again. I'm ready to be hurt again by this genre.
But just might say because it's Denzel and I'm a massive Denzel.
Yeah, and look, so you ask him, look, I could be completely wrong. Do you know what? I hope I'm wrong. I'm giving it this low score because I think it's going to be low, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope I am. Seven, I love you.
Denzel has perfected playing those characters, though, that are like, I should be more successful, but I've got too much of a temper. I'm too smart to play by the rules. Like, you know, like taking Pelham 1-2-3, or like a bone collector, or Remember the Titans, or whatever it is. They're like, oh, I should be equally successful for whatever reason. Well, society have been thrown in my way, so it could just be another, like, one of those where it's like, oh, you know, he was too clever to play by the rules to be like, to get a promotion or something, and that's why he's still walking to be.
And look, final points on what I'd say about it is the director, you know, he's done some good stuff. If to name a few, The Rookie, Butler, he's done The Blind Side, which I haven't seen yet, but you know, got good reviews. Mm-hmm. Saving Mr. Banks, again, another good film. And The Founder, Butler.
All right, that's a good catalog.
Yeah, and I'm going to mention that one now. This is why I'm worried again. So he did. There's some great films in there. Great film, especially The Founder. The Founder was one of those movies that was on TV one night, and I saw really randomly. How great is that film? Brilliant. I won't get too much into it, but that's a film that I recommend to so many people when they look up something to watch. I'm like, it's about The Founder of McDonald's. It's brilliant. But the last film that he directed before this was in 2019, which was The Highwaymen, which, again, Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson, absolute letdown.
Yeah, that's a big letdown. And it's the same type of genre as this new that we're looking at.
So there you go. But I think that's a big red flag, in my opinion.
If The Little Things is like these, yeah, The Furnace is The Highwaymen, we'll have to form our own category of film. Call them like neo terrible crime thrillers or something, and just like
and there's plenty of examples.
So I think it's a hard one to get right. The crime thriller. Do you know?
You get it right. You get it wrong. That sounds ridiculous to say as simple as that, but that's the chance you take.
Either it's good or it's not good enough.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And you'll always, it's a tough one to gauge an audience with as well.
Definitely.
Because you have a room full of 10 people there, you know, 8 of them be like, that was fantastic. But you still will have a percentage of the audience who'll be like,
but no. I guarantee there's someone listening right now that thought The Highwaymen was a good film.
Yeah.
You're wrong, but that's your opinion. Final score, I'm going to go with 49. I think it's going to be in the lower end of the scale. I think it's going to be one of those films that it's going to be pegged as this could have been great because of its cast and its story, but it got lost because it didn't know where it was going. I think it's going to go that way.
All right, so name of the movie and your final review, or final rating, sorry.
The name of the film is The Little Things, and my final rating is 49%.
Adam, name of the movie and final rating.
You just said it.
Name of your movie and final rating.
All right.
I'm hardly going to ask you for a repeat of what he said. There goes a nice way to end off this segment.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Mark. Adam.
News of the world, and I think, well, it has a rating of 89%, so I can't get that wrong because it's already out. But
yeah, 84. No, wait.
Gogan.
Ghostbusters Afterlife. I'm going to go my original.
Whoa.
80%.
You said 90.
Yeah, I jumped to 90 after you pushed me, but I'm sticking with 80.
We'll move on from there.
It's our actor of the week. So if you remember from episode one.
I don't. Refresh.
Oh, yeah, because I don't. we picked Tom Hardy. So we decided to go off. It was Rotten Tomatoes we're using, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Rotten Tomatoes.
So we'd go off his number one rated movie and then his worst rated movie. So in continuation with episode one, we're going to judge the bad movie first, which is This Means War. I'll just jump in because, again, it was one of those movies we saw so long ago that I actually did kind of, I had to use YouTube a little bit just to remind myself of a couple of sequences, because I remember seeing that and thinking, this isn't funny and this just doesn't work. The cast in it is fantastic, that it should work,
because
it stars himself, Chris Pine, and Reese Witherspoon. Overall, you watch it, you probably feel it's a bit of a low point for each of them. I think this type of movie doesn't suit Tom Hardy. I went back to YouTube to find a couple of clips because I thought at the time I didn't find it funny, but maybe I'm a bit older now. I find it a little bit more of a kind of a go-to, but no, just didn't like it. Maybe it'd be a hangover movie to watch one day, but
yeah, it's an easy watch though, isn't it? Like,
yeah, that's it. I struggled to find a laugh in it though. I don't know about you, Ferg.
I actually got it up online and I skimmed it. And for like a rom-com, essentially, the action is pretty good. Isn't it? Like there's good fight scenes. There's a fight scene between him and Chris Pine, Tom Hardy and Chris Pine. And it's actually really well choreographed. It's quite good. There's some funny moments in it. This might sound weird, but my overall opinion was, I remember disliking the film for a certain reason, was because Chris Pine's character is made out to be this kind of like Lothario, and he's the ladies' man and all the women love him, and I'm like, what? Tom Hardy is standing next to you. Man's a handsome bastard. Actually, handsome isn't the word for him, it's rugged. And you've got Chris Pine with his oversized head, big forehead. He's this, I see Butter shaking his head.
I'm kind of shaking with him.
But he's one of these people that is like, oh, he's a Hollywood handsome man. Is he though?
No, in this film, Tom Hardy is not near yet. It's because in my notes I have not as dashing as Chris Pine. He is not in his peak.
He's made out to be like sensitive.
He doesn't have the beard. He's kind of, and he plays this kind of more awkward English Hugh Grant type. Whereas Chris Pine is more of like the redeeming, I was a terror because I was hurt as a child. And Chris Pine is a handsome man as well. He's like this all American. So
that's exactly my point. He's the all American idea, but I mean, like, if you really look at him, his head is fucking huge. It doesn't fit his body. Better looking than me, like Jesus. But I mean, look, the point is that, like, I know, this is where I'm coming from. I'm not saying that in the film it should have been this or that. It's like, it's that they made Tom Hardy's character this. They made Chris Pine.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was a slip of the tongue. I've had a few beers. Tom Hardy. It's his cousin.
I'll have another Tom Hardy and Coke, please.
Yeah. It's his non-union equivalent. But you can get him cheap. But no, look, it was the fact that they made him out to be this shitty character. And it's a scene as well where it was like, she says that Chris Pine's character has small hands. And he's like, you know what that means? You have a small penis. Or her friend says, you know what that means? You have a small penis. And he's laughing at him. And then the one back on him is like, oh, but Tuck, which is Tom Hardy character, is like, oh, but Tuck is British. And then Chris Pine starts breaking his shit laughing, like, ha ha ha. I was like, hold on, they just said you have a small penis, and his slagging is that he's British. And it's just, it's a real, it's one of those films, just like, it was that time in the early 2000s where British people seemed exotic. Do you know what I mean? Like from a faraway land. He's made out to be this Hugh Grant type character. But then you really get the real Tom Hardy. Do you remember the paintball scene, which I thought was kind of funny? Where he goes and he starts like kicking the shit out of all these kids and stuff. He's like, see that kid? He came out of nowhere. I got him now. It throws him off the top of something. So, wow, you're really into paintball. I think overall, as Gavin said, great hangover film, easy watch. There's some laughs in there. I mean, again, I feel like Tom Hardy gets his own better on Chris Pine. You know, he shoots him in the neck with a dart and makes him fall asleep, which has happened to me on a date. I can tell you now, it's detrimental. I went back, and if my girlfriend is listening, this was way before you, Nicole. You've gone back to someone's house. They've left you alone for a couple of minutes while they're doing something else. They came back, and I was out cold. And that was the end of that.
A dart to the neck.
No, it was my metaphorical dart to the neck, which is Jameson and ginger ale. I fell asleep and you know, like, Reese Witherspoon comes in and she's massively disappointed to see him asleep, and you can understand that's massively embarrassing. And I was like, damn, I feel that one. But I think you're right. I think Tom Hardy worked nicely in a kind of a funny film.
I liked it. I like This Means War. I liked it when I was single. I like it to watch when I'm in a relationship. You guys said it's a good hangover film. I also think it's a good movie. A Saturday night staying in, if you're getting a takeaway, I think it's that type of film.
Yeah.
I would also agree with you, Gog. As much as I like Tom Hardy and does his best, I feel like they probably could have got someone else maybe for this to kind of pair up. Because I just... Maybe it's from this. I would have seen so many other Tom Hardy movies before this. And to watch, like, Warrior and Inception and Dunkirk and Locke and Mad Max. And Tom Hardy is, like, the ultra-cool dude. So to see him do this, you're just throwing a bit. I'm not saying he doesn't do a good job, but maybe you could have got somebody else. I'm trying to think of, like, an English... Maybe like your man James Darcy, you know what I was talking about earlier from Broadchurch. Yeah. You know, someone like that.
Who could have done it.
Or Charlie Cox even. He could have been...
Oh, Charlie Cox. Yeah.
So, to tie it all in, and you have Chris Pine did Star Trek. See, it's all well written, folks. You think we're just going on these tangents, but it's all so interconnected, you wouldn't believe it. But overall, I enjoyed This Means War. I think it's a good rom-com. Because, I mean, like... What do you want from rom-com? The end of the day, a few laughs, pretty people to look at, tune out for a couple of hours. I think it ticks all those boxes, so I can't have too much complaints about it overall, guys.
You want to be able to laugh, though, at the same time.
Ooh, Jesus.
I mean, it's not like...
Scathing.
I was only just saying
that. I know, I thought there was a couple of laughs in it. You know, I think Chris Pine's very good at comedy.
He's very good at, he does that smarmy thing perfectly, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Star Trek films. He is the perfect Captain Kirk. He was brilliant.
He's great. He evolves very well from that, like, high school dropout type to, like, commanding a starship. He does it very well.
Okay, so do we know what it got on Rotten Tomatoes?
26.
26. Butler, would you agree, or would you go higher? Would you stay around?
I think I'd give it a passing grade. I'd give it like a 40%.
I agree with Butler alone. I think there's a lot of films that people love, we love, that get a low score because they're not necessarily written well. They might not be a good film, but they're really enjoyable. So, I mean, I give it like a 45%. You know what I mean? You see like a 6.5 on IMDb and you're like, I love that film.
No, look, and I'll finish you here with the rain. I know what you're saying, look, yeah, you won't be able to laugh, but at the same time, I would still have no problem sitting down and watching it as a hangover movie. I'd be more than happy to meet us there with the 40%.
I think so.
I think it could be, you know, a bit harsh down in the 20s. So,
well, look, we'll move on to his top rated movie, and this is a movie that we all love.
In this wasteland, I am the one who runs from both the living and the dead. A man reduced to a single instinct. Survive.
It is by my hand! You arise! From the ashes! Of this world!
We are not things! We are not things!
Where is she taking them? I want them back! They're my property!
Want to get through this?
Let's go!
As the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken. It was hard to know who was more crazy. everyone else.
Ferg, I don't know if you, I know you're a massive Tom Hardy fan, so I feel like if you want to kind of dig into his best movie, which is Mad Max.
Yeah, so Mad Max Fury Road, I'm sure most people have seen it. I actually couldn't believe when I looked at it again that it's already 5 years old.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
And this is a bit of a weird one for me. Is I didn't like it when I first saw it. I didn't love it. And don't get me wrong, I rewatched it and I loved it. I saw it in the cinema when it first came out. And this sounds mad, but like there's certain things that put me off. Like maybe Tom Hardy was pegged as like the main character. Like I love the original Mad Max films. It's the same director as the original Mad Max films. And you know, he was pegged as this like main character, but you know, he wasn't in the end. And when I saw it in the cinema first, I was like, and there were certain scenes where they're sped up. If that makes sense, like the scenes are sped up, and it really put me off. And also what threw me off initially when I watched it in the cinema was the syncing was way off, so it was really annoying me a lot with your man. He was in Skins, Nicholas Hoult's character. And you know, I saw it and I was like, I didn't know what to think when I left the cinema. I was like, was I disappointed by that? Did I love it? I don't know. So I watched it again and I realized I fucking love this film. It's great. And the main point I love it actually fixes one of my qualms about the film. Is I was pissed off about the syncing with the lips and the sound,
yeah.
But that was because there's very, very little CGI in the film.
Yeah, which is so, a great show.
Which is amazing. And you know, I love practical effects. So most of it was filmed with real stunts. They actually hired Cirque du Soleil performers to train certain actors. They had Cirque du Soleil performers on the big poles, and all the explosions and everything, they're all real, and it was brilliant. And then I realized why is the sound off is because they had to dub them over because no one can hear what the actors are saying amid the practical effects. There's these massive explosions.
And the carnage that's going on.
And this is the thing, like, and it's brilliant though, isn't it? Like, and I mean, the whole kind of like segue to actual Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa, she was great in it as well. She's fantastic. She really rocked that, didn't she? It's such a good action film. It really is. Like from start to finish, it's visually stunning. Unbelievable explosions, that kind of stuff. But what I love the little kind of like little bits about it, like Immortan Joe, who's the bad guy.
What a name for a bad name. Boy.
Immortan Joe played by the same actor as the original bad guy from the original film, who was Toe Cutter in the first Mad Max.
You did your research. I had that point down.
Yes,
so damn you, Berg.
Beat you to it. But yeah, I mean, he played it and he died recently. Just a couple of months ago, RIP, Immortan Joe.
And the same director as well.
Yes, George Miller. George Miller is a weird one as well, because George Miller did, like, he came up with the concept of Mad Max and all the Mad Max films, but he also directed Happy Feet and Babe.
That's very
strange catalogue of films.
It is, because I read it last night. I was like, because they talk about trying to do the third Mad Max film back in like the 90s, or like into the early 2000s. They're like, oh, he had to abandon because he had to start work on Happy Feet. I felt like, I am so tired. I must have read that wrong.
But I said, like, everyone's great. And the Furiosa's great. Great storyline. Vision is amazing. The thing is, like, I actually read that the film was supposed to be made years ago. And this is a great point that you made earlier on of, like, now's the time to make a remake or now's the time to make a sequel because you've got all this money and effects. And, yeah, okay, it's mostly practical effects, but, like, you don't have the same kind of cameras and angles and that kind of stuff. Originally, it was supposed to be filmed in Nairobi, in this desert. And something political happened with the US. They couldn't film there. So they moved it on a little bit later. It was originally supposed to be filmed in like 2001, which would have been crap, let's be fair. Because
it might have been good for that.
There's a lot of films. But, there's a lot of films in the early 2000s.
It would have been like The Mummy Returns or something.
Yeah.
A great example.
I think, there's obviously exceptions, but the fucking early 2000s are like a cesspit. It's like a red film with the die at one stage. The same thing as music and fashion. Awful. Nickelback. But
I'm sure Copper's had the same.
But the thing was, like, it was tried to be done so many times until it actually happened. And originally, George Miller actually wanted Heath Ledger to play Mad Max, R.I.P. Heath Ledger as well.
He would have worked,
Would have worked.
Yeah, would have worked.
As an Australian himself. Yeah, it would have been great. He really wanted him initially.
Recorded in the end, fair.
It was actually recorded in the same place that they originally planned, which was a desert in Nairobi. They had actually moved it to a place in New Zealand at one stage, and there was some sort of storm. So they ended up doing it in the desert in Nairobi. It's funny because from 2001 until 2015, the production had been stopped like 5 or 6 times for different reasons. And it was funny that they went to the original wanted to do it. Yeah.
It won 6 Oscars. Best editing, best costume design, makeup and hairstyling, sound editing and production design. And that to me is why it's such a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love it. It's one of those movies I was so happy I could say I've seen it in a cinema. If it was to be re-released again in the cinema, I'd be first one in the queue.
It's great.
Visually, it's something,
isn't it?
I had to watch one or two clips again. I was like, do I have enough time to watch this movie before Fergus comes up to the podcast? No, I don't. And any further points on what we mentioned there?
Not too much. I agree with kind of everything you guys said. I agree as well. The film has 90% practical effects.
Mm.
And for me, seeing it in cinema, it has to be the most visually spectacular film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite film. It's a really cool film. Probably wouldn't be in my top 100 films.
Ooh.
But visually, it's the best film I've ever seen. And just slightly off topic, but I'll bring it back around. I watched Avatar for the first time there last week, and I fucking hated it. Hated the acting, hated the writing. Even the effects aren't even that good. And Steven Spielberg was like, oh, it's the most visually spectacular film ever made. What the fuck does he know, right? I just think Mad Max compared to that is apples and oranges. And especially done with practical effects, as you guys were talking about. Yeah. It's incredible how that film was made. Experience, if anyone has the chance to go see a re-release in the cinema, I really recommend it. And I hope Furiosa, the prequel coming out next year, is as engrossing as it.
I think the great thing about that is that they're releasing the Furiosa film, but they're also releasing a separate Mad Max film. So Tom Hardy is reprising his role as Mad Max, but it's going to be his own film this time. I suppose this is supposed to be a Tom Hardy segment. If we could talk a little bit about Tom Hardy in the film, yes, he doesn't have very many lines in the film, but he's still a very prominent character, very imposing presence. He's such an action... But a gritty action, do you know what I mean? He's getting the shit kicked out of him, you know, he's strapped to the front of a car.
He makes the character believable.
He does, he's humanizing, isn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know what's funny actually about the Mad Max things? I loved the Mad Max films, and up until about 6 months ago, I thought that I had seen all the Mad Max films. But I thought that Mad Max 2 was the first Mad Max. I had never seen the original Mad Max from 1979.
Yeah,
So what do you think the first Mad Max is?
I'm just trying to remember now because I'm thinking.
Do you remember your man with the humongous? He's like, he's outside. Just walk away.
To be honest, I'm actually trying.
All the people in the little camp.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Mad Max 2.
Yeah, maybe I am.
Max 1 is before the world is a complete wasteland.
Yeah.
And it's in Australia. Everything is still relatively okay. There's still a police force. Mad Max is part of a police force.
Wow.
And he drives his own certain car.
Yeah.
So the world is still together, but barely. And Toe Cutter is part of a gang, and they're trying to stop
him. Wouldn't mind seeing that. Brilliant.
Yeah, so there's a chief of police and everything. They have their own police department. They're still trying to stop and keep world order. And when Mad Max 2 kicks in, it's everything is completely on the shit.
That's gone, yeah.
That was the fringes of society. I was to myself, how? And thank God I'm not alone. I thought that was the first Mad Max film.
I've generally never seen that.
Mad Max 2 was 1981. First one was 1979. And then there's Mad Max Thunderdome, which I have a bit of a soft spot with Tina Turner in it, which I think is fantastic. Have you seen the original one, Muller? The first one?
Oh, never seen any of them. Besides
Fury Road. Have you seen any of them?
No, I don't like post-apocalyptic films. They make me anxious.
They make me anxious. This could happen.
I just say for the people listening, today while recording, there's the racing festival on in Dublin on Fury Road is one of the horses running today. And I thought, oh, we're doing a podcast about Fury Road today. Fury Road is running. This is simpatico. And of course it lost. The fun for the podcast for the year has gone down the drain. I mean, we had all these kind of great guests lined up. We were going to fly here, fly there. We've got all these great effects coming in. But no, it's all. We were scheduled to have Tom Hardy on the show. Sorry about that, guys. They said it was a banker, but I don't know. I apologize for that.
Well, look, before we move off this segment, I'd like to ask, is there anything... Mm-hmm. that you thought was worse than This Means War, or is there a film that you think that, you know, to me, this is Tom Hardy's best performance?
I think one that's 100% worse than This Means War is The Drop. That's a terrible one. Nobody watched that.
Garbage.
And it should be good, and it's not. And then obviously, I think what we were saying earlier, I mean, Warriors, beautiful. Locke is fantastic. Dark Knight Rises, Inception, Legend is a great film. Legend would maybe be his best performance, I would say, maybe up there. I haven't seen it, but I've heard great things, but I know you love Bronson, Fergus. And I'm worried about him lately, just in the sense that, like, that Capone film seems strange and get the best reviews, and then Venom's an interesting choice. But what would you guys, anything worth?
Yeah, like, first of all, I agree. I haven't watched Capone, but I'm gonna give it a go just to see. I actually was quite excited for it because he's a great character actor. Yeah. Tom Hardy's a bit of a chameleon, in my opinion. Like he's first of all, I think in my opinion, Tom Hardy has to be one of the best actors of our generation at the moment. I wouldn't be worried about him in a sense. I know exactly where you're coming from. I didn't hate Venom, I didn't love it. There's a Venom 2.
It's a weird pick,
and I think it's a money film that he did. I think it's a lot of money in that film. Capone, I honestly feel that he treated that as a passion project and it didn't turn out the way he wanted to because he went into so many prosthetics. He obviously took a long time. He's very method. He obviously got into it a lot. I completely agree with you, Buller. Warrior's
fantastic.
It's one of those films that like really shocked me in a way. Like beautifully acted, great characters, great sports drama. I think that my hands down best performance out of him, it has to be Locke, purely because it's just him. He's the only physical character in it. If you haven't seen Locke, he's in a car for an hour and a half. The only other characters are on the phone to him on speakerphone. He's driving to London from Birmingham because there's a woman that he got pregnant. Basically, his father abandoned his family. He doesn't want the same thing to happen. He's already got a wife and kids. But the whole film falls at him on this drive from Birmingham to London. You know, he's got this big, massive job where he's pouring concrete the next day. It's this massive job. He's got his foreman on. He's got his assistant on. He's got his wife on. His sons are telling him about a football game. And you think that one man in a car, camera facing him. I looked it up. It was filmed over 8 nights. They just put the camera in front of him and he drove his BMW. And it's gripping. I couldn't believe how gripping it was. And there's one thing I will say about that. Don't watch the trailer. It's probably the worst trailer. If I had watched that trailer and then watched Locke, I think I would have been disappointed. Okay. The trailer makes it out to be this kind of like mad crime thriller where he eventually gets out of the car and shit happens to him and he gets attacked and this kind of stuff. But it's actually just showing these scenes where he's hallucinating about talking to his dad and that kind of stuff in the actual film. Mad cast as well, like Olivia Colman, obviously an Oscar winner and a Golden Globe winner. She's on the other end of the phone. We've got an Irish actor. Oh, my God, his name escapes me.
Andrew Scott,
thank you very much. And, of course, you've got, I know he's already young, but a younger... You know who it is, Buller? Spider-Man.
Tom Holland.
Tom Holland plays his son as well.
And I love Tom Hardy's as well. Should that's great, Dad. I even Locke, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. His Welsh accent was brilliant. I don't know why the decision was made to make him Welsh, but he nailed it. he fucking nailed it. You could have been English. And that's actually, before I pass on the goal, I just want to make an interesting point about tennis. This might come up again at some stage. But I was watching this thing about Robert Pattinson when he was in tennis. And he was like, oh, you know, my accent in tennis, I used inspiration from, I can't remember where it was from, but he used like a some musician's accent as a prominent accent. And he said in the interview, he was like, I don't like, if my character is from London, I don't like using my own accent because I feel like I'm cheating. So I need to adjust it. I was like, that's really interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So if you play tennis.
I think the Welsh accent as well plays into like how, not conservative, but how kind of like concise and
practical
the character of Ivan Locke is. And I think like it's a very like, the Welsh accent is kind of, it flows, but it's also very flat and it's very logical. And I think that's how Ivan Locke is as well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, and if you want someone in a character that's now and a half speaking, I suppose you want the kind of the music of a kind of a Welsh accent. You don't just want like a, oh, from Birmingham. And I think that might drag people down with like a Welsh kind of, you know, a kind of peaks and flows with a very interesting kind of octaves in the voice and stuff. So I think that keeps you engaged.
There's an interesting kind of an up and
down. Yeah.
Was I even lucky? Yeah. There's a real kind of like an up and down to it. I think, yeah, I brilliant. But like, have you seen Locke? Yeah?
I haven't seen Locke. And I know you have been on to me about
ouch.
This. And look, it's something that is on the list to watch. I am a Tom Hardy fan myself. So if there's anyone that would kind of get me into watching it, would be him. Sounds like a movie I'd have to be in the mood for. But anyway, I suppose getting away from that, I would just go from any other movies. Warrior is one of my favorite movies of probably my top 10 list. Bad movies, I wouldn't have another one.
Have you seen The Drop?
No, I it wouldn't be on my list either to watch.
It's bad, and I think it's James Gandolfini's last movie as well, which makes it even more tragic.
I wouldn't want to do that. I have a fond respect for that man.
Look, Mickey Clark, God, how long have we had Tom Hardy? I honestly, I think, you know, people have asked you who your favorite actor at the moment is, and I often say Tom Hardy because so many good films, so many good performances. Like,
yeah, I wouldn't be able to say who my favorite actor is, but I certainly know that Tom Hardy is.
He's up there.
Definitely for you, top three.
Top three,
for
me,
he'd be probably top 10, but.
And he might have done, this was Brad Pitt's, well, it was first, it's DiCaprio's, and it's Brad Pitt's kind of title to hang on to for a while. Now I think it might be Tom Hardy's. I think Tom Hardy could be the best actor out there and not have an Oscar.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think he's one good pick away.
He wants to be getting away from the Venoms and the Capones. Yeah. I think it'll be more of a legend or something. It'll be
The Revenant.
Tom Hardy's great in it. Tom Hardy's great in it.
Well, Tom Hardy played Fitzgerald, who's the bad guy, very, very good in it. But look, we'll move on. I think if we're all to give Tom Hardy a rating, 10 out of 10.
What would you give his filmography out of 10, guys?
His filmography? I would give him, in my opinion, he's done more good than bad.
Definitely.
Especially in recent years. You know, if I was to give like a fair score for the bad films he's done, maybe like an 8.5, 9 maybe. He's minus a 1 for like maybe some bad choices.
I give him an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd be going with Butler on this, on the basis that I have seen less of his bad movies than Butler you have. Mm. I've seen some fantastic movies. He doesn't deserve less than an 8.
Well, look, I'd like to reiterate that's for his filmography.
Yeah.
That's not him as an actor. Him as an actor, I think he's a 10 out of 10. I think the man's a fabulous actor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Even the bad films he's in, he's been good.
And I think he'll applaud us for saying that.
Please love me. look, we'll move on to our next segment. The recommendations that we gave each other. I'm going to start with Gogan.
Oh, my movie or film is The End of the Tour. And it was recommended by you, Fergus, to myself.
Oh, who, me?
Yeah, so no surprise why you came to me first. Thank you very much.
I've been dying to know about this.
I'm the exact opposite of you. I tried to watch it over Christmas period. I was too hungover.
It's tough
too
watch. Tired. It's tough watch, though.
And yesterday, I started watching it, and I was like, no, this is not going to be done. So today, went back to it, nice and fresh. There's two actors that I'm not very fond of. who star in this, Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg, who I fucking hate. I fucking hate him. I don't know why he's in that.
I understand that.
Can't stand them. Look, it's about David Lipsky. He's a reporter for Rolling Stones magazine. He interviews the acclaimed novelist David Foster Wallace for 5 days, during which they form a unique bond. I kind of grew in and out of the movie as I was watching it. There were certain scenes in it that I was watching and I was like, I think I should feel a bit more emotional about that.
I think it takes a certain mood to watch it.
A certain mood. And to be honest, I would like to see someone else play David Lipsky than your man. And that could just be a personal hatred have for that actor. But I feel someone would have been a bit more convincing.
Mm.
Jason Segel, fucking brilliant in it. Yeah. I actually kind of grew to really like him as the movie went on. Really believable. Some really interesting lines as well that really kind of poignant, deep-hitting lines.
Yeah.
And there's something about the... there's a line, I didn't write it word for word, but it's something to do with like jumping from a skyscraper.
Mm.
And it's something to do with, in the human mind, we were willing to jump from a skyscraper because the alternative is worse than the actual jumping out of a building 60 floors up in the air. And I was like, oh, that's really hard hitting.
Yeah.
And the other one I mentioned is the, you mentioned something about the internet. Been like, you know, when he would have said this whenever to David Lipsky, the internet wouldn't have been as big as it was. And he goes, it's only going to get worse and worse. Our life is going to be more controlled and it's going to be more convenient to sit alone. And I was like, you know what? That's so accurate to today's world. Mm. So it was kind of like, geez.
Because the film's based in the 90s.
I know I'd never heard of David Foster Wallace before, but never heard of him. And I was like, geez, this guy really sounded like he had a troubled life.
Mm.
But when it came to writing a book or expressing himself,
he could
say that.
Yeah.
So I'm happy I watched it when I was sober. Hungover, I probably would have given up on it.
It's a film for a certain mood, I think.
Yeah.
And like the description of it is, it's like an insight into the human condition, and I'm doing like air quotes, the human condition. And it is. It's one of those things. I think I watched it. I think it caught me at the right time, and it's a bit of a tinker when you, like, you're completely right. I think Jason Segel was, I think, brilliant.
Oh, fantastic. Brilliant. Yeah,
he was really good in it.
And a serious role for him as well. Yeah. We don't get to see that with him a lot.
Yeah, you know, I would like this film, obviously, because I was like, can I get past him being the kind of oaf, jokey kind of character that he is? But, yeah, and, like, you're right, like, there's those kind of quotes, and I think he makes like, a comment about how he said about being famous, like, you know, the book blew up, and he had written a book, and he was just like, I really, you know, cherish my regular guyness, is what he was saying. He's like, I don't like this attention, and you know, because he was like, oh, you know, people think that you're this genius that, you know, has written this New York Times bestseller, and he was like, I don't like that kind of acclaim. I'm just some guy, really cherish that I'm a regular person. He's like, I don't like people putting me on a pedestal because it puts him on a pedestal in his own mind. But like, not to get too deep, but I think it's a really poignant film about like depression and the human condition and the human mind and that kind of stuff. But I'm digressing too much. What would you have rated this? I know you hated.
Yeah, no, I'd still take him aside, and look, it's still a watchable movie. It's a slow movie. You need to be able to focus on the movie. So going on, I'd go 7. There's elements of it that I couldn't recommend it to Kira, for instance, because I know Kira wouldn't. Yeah. But that's not fair on the other viewers that I wouldn't recommend.
I agree with you in the sense about Jesse Eisenberg. Look, it's definitely a film to watch at a certain time.
Yeah.
If it catches you in the right mood, I would say, to be honest, watch it alone. I don't think it's a film to watch with people. I think it's a film that you watch alone and you really kind of like listen to the, because
you can reflect to this movie.
Yeah. Well, did you hear stuff that maybe Jason Segel's character said that you were kind of like, and you had a bit of a reflection on what he said?
It's a very good point. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think we've all been his character at one stage. That's fair to say, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see maybe some of your own like personal friends' characteristics in this as well, you know. And like, it kind of makes you think, Jesus, am I doing enough as well? And like, Yeah, it's a hard hitting movie.
Do you like The Social Network?
Again, it comes down because of him. I'm not 100% sure how I feel about it. I've seen this movie 2 to 3 times. Adam's looking at us being like, yeah, I'm part of this podcast as well. But I've seen that movie 3 times, and I don't know how I've seen it 3 times, if you know what I mean. Yeah. I'm not like, I want to go back and watch that. But when it's on, I'm like, I'll give this a watch. Yeah. And I think he's perfectly fitted for that role.
I think, he's never going to hear this. I think that Jesse Eisenberg as a person seems like quite a bit of a see next Tuesday. I remember watching this interview with him, and it really put me off him was he was in that god awful film Now You See Me, which I don't know how it got a sequel, about the magicians.
I actually don't mind it.
Oh, I knew you. I fucking knew you. The first one isn't...
Again, you're out of 2 to 1.
I said god awful because it got a sequel, which is diabolical. The first one, it's an okay film. I watched it in the cinema. It's an okay film. It's been an action film. But the ending was terrible, and also they got a sequel. It just didn't need a sequel. It was shite. But he was doing an interview. Obviously, Morgan Freeman's in the film. And the interviewer said to him, she called Morgan Freeman... Freeman instead of Morgan Freeman. She's like, oh, well, Freeman said this. And he stops her and he goes, sorry, Freeman? What is he in your baseball fantasy draft? His name is Morgan Freeman. Do you know him personally? I made a fucking arse of her. I was like, what an arrogant bastard. Like, he really comes across as a really arrogant know-it-all.
Well, that's why he's perfect for Mark Zuckerberg. Like,
yeah, he's perfect for it.
Perfect.
I mean, but I'd suggest watching The End of the Tour to you. I think you might like it.
I think it will.
I don't know. I watched the trailer. When I watched the trailer, I know you guys were saying it's great. Look at Jason Segel in the trailer. He looks like someone who, doing that role, is like, I'm going to try so hard to do a dramatic role. And it just looked really, didn't look like it came off at all the trailer for me.
I'd still give it a watch.
I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised. I think maybe the trailer might fool you a bit on Jason Segel's character.
Jason Segel also has a film camp this year with Casey Affleck. Casey Affleck's wife is dying, and Jason Segel is their best friend who moves in to help raise the kids. Jason Segel's doing anything to kind of get out of that How I Met Your Mother mode, isn't he?
I was pleasantly surprised by him. Look, I'm happy to finish my point on the end of the third there. Fuller, I believe if you want to tell me what you had to watch and who selected for you.
Yes, I had the unfortunate pleasure of sitting down last week to watch the 2008 Defiance. Scott, can you recommend this to me? It's a true story. It's about these four brothers, the Bielski brothers, and they live in kind of like the forests in Eastern Europe, and they basically, it takes place in Belarus, and all the Jews fleeing Nazi Germany, Nazi Poland, whatever, they kind of congregate in the forest, and the brothers all agree to kind of look after them. That's a really interesting plot for a film. I would think straight away, if you had that true story, there's not much you could kind of go wrong with it. But this is a type of film that it's not an Oscar film, as in it's not good enough to be an Oscar film. It doesn't really have enough engrossing action to be like a popcorn action film. So who's this film made for? Who's getting enjoyment out of this film? That's kind of, it falls right into like the middle of like, I think it's like a 51 on Rotten Tomatoes. It stars Daniel Craig, Liev Schreiber, George McKay, and what's his name? Billy Elliot. Can't think of his name. But yeah, it's James Bond, Billy Elliot, Sabretooth, the kid from the Proclaimers musical are tasked with helping this thousands of Jews flee Nazi Germany. Gogan, you recommend it. I don't think you're even too mad at it either.
In fairness, everything you've said is quite accurate about it, because who was it aimed at? I think Daniel Craig was the wrong lead, especially if he wasn't going to put in the effort for getting a Russian accent.
The accent is so bad. And like, now the film, it did turn 20 million at the box office, and that's because Daniel Craig's in it. If that's anyone else, that's, you know, obviously not like Brad Pitt or Christian Bale or something. It's not going to turn a profit. I don't think these type of movies will exist in Hollywood in 20 years. There's no point in them. It's like this, if this movie existed now, this would be a Netflix movie or an Amazon movie, like one of those straight to streaming.
a true story like this deserves to be told, but it deserves to be given the time to be told correctly, and I think they rushed it.
Most definitely, and even reading about the real-life people afterwards, the brothers, they moved to New York and they set up like a furniture moving company. That would even be great to have in it as like a forward flashback thing in the film. Like, imagine going from like some asshole telling you, move that couch, it'd be like saving thousands of Jewish people's lives from like Nazis. I mean, there's a great paradox there. I think that would be great as a show go.
Yeah, no, definitely. And would you give it a rating out of 10?
4.
What's its rating at the moment? It has quite a high rating.
I think Boner's head 50% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think it has like an 80 something.
It's 58.
I haven't seen it, and it's one of those ones that I'm kind of putting off. And I was like, oh, maybe it'll go like Daniel Craig, like war films. But I'm kind of glad I didn't watch it now. It's on Netflix. It's been on there for a while.
It doesn't do the World War II movie genre any favors.
It sounds like it's a great, like what I said there, it sounds like it's a great story that just hasn't been done any justice.
Yeah,
it sounds like it could be amazing. In your opinion, Butler, is it because it tried to tread the line between action and drama too much?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, it's not deep enough to be this thought provoking Schindler's List-esque type film. And it's not balls to wall action enough to be like a Dirty Dozen or something. Mm. It's just, it tries to be too much of everything and you wind up getting nothing. Yeah. I think that's the best way.
Yeah, that's fair point. And, Butler, I believe that would leave you then picking movies for Fergus, would it?
It would, indeed.
It would, yeah. Done my calculations right there.
If my maths between three people makes sense. That leaves one. Two gone.
Well, Fergus, you were the only one out of the three of us that I'm getting the feeling that you were actually absorbed in. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely love this film. I absolutely love this. So Butler recommended to me The Colour of Money. If you haven't seen The Colour of Money, it is an unofficial sequel to The Hustler. If you haven't seen The Hustler, shame on you. Essentially, Paul Newman plays a pool hustler that's playing nine ball, which is a type of pool. Young tries to beat this kind of seasoned pro called Minnesota Fats. And, you know, it goes from there. Look, I'm not going to go too much into that, but The Hustler is a great film. The Colour of Money, as I said, is like an unofficial sequel. I believe it was, I want to say 1986. So essentially, Paul Newman plays the same character that he did before. But I like that it's an unofficial sequel because you don't have to have seen The Hustler.
Like, no, not at all. Because he's a different, he's almost a different character entirely, persona-wise.
Yeah, he's almost a different character entirely. So I can talk a little bit about like having seen The Hustler, but also if you haven't seen The Hustler, it also is, it's, you know, if you just seen The Colour of Money and then go, wait a minute, there's a film before this? It's just brilliant. It's a sports film in the sense, you know, it's got the montages, and I love the 80s. I fucking love the 80s. I love everything about it. It's got a very, very young Tom Cruise. And I think Butler made this comment about it, where Tom Cruise is so manic and annoying in it. You're like, at times, you're like, is he even acting? Is he acting, or is he just being himself? I'm pretty sure he's very young in it. Anyway, so, look, Eddie Felsen is you know, the start of the film, he's in this bar, a dive bar. He sees Tom Cruise's character. Playing nine ball, he's beating everybody, he gets an idea in his head. The end of The Hustler is kind of like, you know, it's not to ruin anything, it's like, I won't give you the ending, it's like, it goes on from kind of there where essentially it lets you know that Eddie's kind of out of the game. He doesn't play nine ball anymore, he seems like a small time hustler, he doesn't do that anymore, but he sees something in Tom Cruise's character and he sees like an opportunity, but also ignites something in him that he wants to get back into nine ball. It's great. It's full of montages. It's like a road movie. Of course, he's fantastic in it. Paul Newman's brilliant. And the thing I love about Paul Newman's character is he played it so well. It's like, I think Paul Newman must have been in his 60s. He looks fantastic for his age. He looks brilliant. He looks great in it. And he plays this kind of, you know, the washed up character. But he treads this line of, you know, to an outside source, someone like his character might look like a loser. And like, Jesus, look at your man. All he does is go around looking for cheap hustles. He's never had a real job. He's no family or whatever. But he treads the line of like, oh, actually, that guy's really cool. He wears nice suits. He treads that line of coolness, yet like you kind of feel sorry for him because he's an older man. But look, it's the whole film is just about him getting Tom Cruise on the road with him. They're going to this big pool competition in Atlanta. Sorry, Atlantic City, not Atlanta. And it's a Martin Scorsese film as well. I didn't know that at all. I don't think they wanted Paul Newman to be in it again. Your man who played Minnesota Fats in The Hustler, he was asked to come back into it as a cameo. He refused. But like, it's just brilliant. It's this great kind of dynamic between the old kind of washed up, yet still cool and savvy sports hustler, I suppose we'll call him, next to Tom Cruise's overly cocky, massively talented, kind of annoying to a certain degree younger character. But then he has his girlfriend, and you know, Paul Newman's character really manipulates him. He says, like, yeah, you know, look, you're working in this shitty toy store, your girlfriend is losing interest in you, and he really manipulates him into kind of getting into it. Like, there's an unbelievable soundtrack in it as well. I mean, Werewolves of London, you've got some B.B. King in there, you got Muddy Waters. It's got all this great kind of dive bar, playing pool music in it. It's fantastic. I'm delighted by it, but I think it was a great recommendation. And if you do watch The Hustler, or you have seen The Hustler, it's, yes, an unofficial sequel, but it's such a more lighthearted version. Obviously, The Hustler is a little bit more intense. There's, you know, more adult themes in it. But I think like one of my big takeouts of it actually is Forest Whitaker. You got John Turturro actually, who's in it as well, who's obviously kind of a half protege of his. But you've got Forest Whitaker in it, who I think is brilliant in it. He's such a kind of throwaway character that if you didn't really pay attention to him, it wouldn't mean much. There's this scene where basically the hustler is getting hustled by his character. And it's great because he's telling these like nonsensical stories as he's playing nine ball with him. And it's quite clearly a distraction move. And you're not even kind of focusing on it at all until like the last couple of minutes of their kind of interaction, you realize that, oh shit, this is just to make him sound like a weirdo, like he was distracting him. And he ends up making a fool of him, and Paul Newman loses all his money. And I think that he's a great little character just injected in there. He's only in it for like 5 minutes of the film, but he's just like, he's a great little injection into it. And like the last point I'll make is like, there was some interesting facts on it. I think that one of my favorite facts was the studio really didn't, like, it was really undecided on how they make the film and what they do with it. And I said they didn't want Paul Newman. They didn't want Tom Cruise either. And they settled on it. But when Martin Scorsese took it over, he said, look, I'll make a deal with you. I said, give me, they asked for a budget of $14.5 million. And they said, we're giving ourselves a 50-day schedule. And Paul Newman and Scorsese agreed that if it went over 50 days, that they would pay for every day that it went over. And the film actually ended up getting wrapped up a day early, and it saved them. It saved them $1.5 million, $1.5 million.
That's insane.
Crazy. Would you like to see to round off as a trilogy now a veteran Tom Cruise character take it on a protege? Would you think that'd be a good way to round it off? Are you happy with just two?
It's interesting.
Tricky one.
It's interesting. I think I'd love to see it, but at the same time, I don't know how I feel about Tom Cruise these days. The thing about the film was, and you made this point to me, was like, Tom Cruise doesn't feel like he's acting because he's so manic in it. But then when there's those scenes where Paul Newman's kind of, you know, coaxed him into doing something, made him a fool of him. There's parts where he's coming on to his girlfriend. Tom Cruise really plays the character really well. Like, he plays this asshole, but he's also very vulnerable. And it's one of those films that kind of reminds me that Tom Cruise is actually a really, really fabulous actor. Mm.
Very true.
Tropic Thunder, Magnolia, Few Good Men. Great actor.
Yeah, yeah. But look, I think I rambled way too much about that film. It's just because I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And I said the music, everything about it. I loved the 80s. I loved the redemption story. I loved Paul Newman. I just loved the road trip of it. Great.
I'll give you your rating then.
I give it, like, I mean, I think it sits at like an 80 something percent, and then like I think it's like a 7.5 out of 10 line to be. But I would, I go ahead and give it like a 9 because I loved it. It's such an enjoyable film. Like, yeah. I don't see anything wrong with the film. Like.
For whatever reason, some people obviously love it. Baseball and pool, well, they're fine to watch. I don't find the most incredibly exciting sports in the world. But there's something the way that when they're transferred onto film, if you get the right director and stuff, they can be the most entertaining, dramatic things on film. Yeah. And that's like the color money they make. 9 ball pills, so unbelievably tense at times. It's very good because of the stakes, because of the characters, everything goes into it. But that's why it's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, sports film.
It really is amazing, and I think that it's so highly rated, but still has like maybe a slight underrating because like you're right, it makes. I've never even heard of 9 ball. I was like, this is brilliant. Right. This is amazing. And I'll say again for anyone that's going to watch it, this film is. No matter how many times he was nominated, this is Paul Newman's one and only Oscar that he won for The Color of Money, which is outrageous when you think of his catalog. And I know for a fact, Waller, he's one of your favorite actors of all time.
He's my favorite actor ever, and our close personal friend Matthew Fitzgerald, his grandfather used to be he used to pick locations for movies, and he did a movie with Paul Newman. And they got onto, Paul Newman wrote him a personal letter saying how much of a nice man our friend Matthew Fitzgerald's granddad was. And that just sums up how much of a classy, forget all the charity work everything else does, what a classy motherfucker Paul Newman was. Mm. As an actor, as a person, he's my all-time goat.
Yeah,
that's a lovely way to finish that.
So last week I picked Parasite, big Oscar film. I was thinking what I'll pick again this week. I'm like, I don't just keep picking Oscar movies, you know, it's too much of an easy out. I wanted to find something on the streaming services that good, but might need a bit of a push up, a bit of a leg up for people to kind of give it a bit more attention. And I wanted to kind of go as far away as Parasite as possible. So I had a quick look. I went to pick an action film I'm a big fan of, and I think it holds up pretty well now. It's on Netflix. It's the Mark Wahlberg film Four Brothers. Have you guys seen it?
Ah, great film.
One of my favorite movies.
It's a solid action film for me. I mean, you've got, like, to give you a rundown of the cast here, Mark Wahlberg, Tyrese Gibson, Andre Benjamin, Gara Hedlund, Terrence Howard, Josh Charles, Sofia Vergara, Chiwetel Ejiofor, and the Irish Fionnuala Flanagan. I look at this film as, like, I think this is almost like a modern Western of sorts. I think it has a lot of similar themes to a Western. You have corrupt police, a villain that's in charge of like a town. You have this gang, like the brothers, kind of coming together to avenge a death. You know, possibly not all of them will survive. There's shootouts. They're criminals, but they're nice criminals. So I think it has a lot of similar themes, like an old-fashioned Western. Again, a lot of good action. I really recommend it as like a, you know, relaxing afternoon movie. The Mark Wahlberg is one of four brothers. They're all adopted. They're adopted by Fionnuala Flanagan. She's murdered at the start of the movie. It reunites the four brothers. They put their differences aside to track down her killer and see what conspiracy has kind of entangled the family. So it's good. It's got it moves at a steady pace. It's very engaging. It's got a few little kind of like heartstring moments, I think. Guys, what do you think of Four Brothers?
Yeah, I'll give a quick I love it. I think it's a great easy watch, and the film holds up quite well.
I'll be watching it over the next couple of days because I haven't seen it in years, and I just got reminded of it. I was like, what a film!
And it's a great cast as well.
My only point, before I move on, my only point about it is that Garrett Hedlund, I feel like. The man has the world in his hands if he wants it, and he's picking shitty roles. I feel like he's a great actor, just waiting for the right moment.
And he can sing.
And
he's a triple threat.
He can sing.
Let's hope
can he dance?
Let's hope that movie.
He can dance. Four Brothers is a musical.
Yeah. Sorry, this was the musical version I was recommending. So look, Gogan, what's your recommendation and your streaming reference?
So my streaming reference, first of all, is Netflix. Now, the movie I picked, Dread. It's starring probably one of my favorite actors at the moment, Carl Urban.
Carl Urban is Mr. Sci-Fi. He's been fucking everything.
But is his latest
The Boys.
The Boys. He's just brilliant.
He's in Star Trek, he's in Lord of the Rings, he's in
and like
Chronicles of Riddick.
He's different in each role.
He's brilliant.
Thor, yeah, geez, I forgot about Thor.
He's unrecognizable in Thor. I did not know that was Carl Urban until like a few months
ago. He's a fantastic actor, and I'm glad he's finally getting some recognition because he's in fucking everything.
Yeah. All right, I'll just go into a quick plot here. In a violent, futuristic city where the police have the authority to act as judge...
And Hoff was, you're not Judge Judy, an executioner.
Oh, he's got a struggle there.
Oh, Judge Judy.
You're not Judge Judy. Where the police have the authority to act as judge, jury, and executioner, a cop teams up with a trainee to take down a gang that deals the drug slow-mo.
I love this movie. I absolutely love this.
They took the original. Let's just make this better.
Yeah.
Not a hard job to do. Low budget as well.
Mm.
And it's brilliant. It reminds me a lot of, I'm trying to think of the name of the movie. The
Raid?
The Raid. Thank you. Raid meets something else, but I can't figure it out. I've been trying to think all day of what crossover would.
RoboCop?
Yeah, actually, that's a great example. And there's a really good fact that Carl Urban said himself. He confirms that the helmet never comes off in the movie, and it's a testament to the original comic book.
Yeah.
And I love that, because you go back to the original, and I'm pretty sure the helmet was off 95% of the time.
It was like 15 minutes into the film came off.
Exactly. And I was like, that's not what it's about. You know, like, he's a judge.
I have a soft spot for the 80s one, just because I love hilarious 80s.
There's some way of comments. Funny picks in the 80s
one. But you're completely right. Like, the original, before any of the films, was a graphic novel. It's very violent, and that's how Dredd is.
Yeah, and I'll give a shout out to the director on it, Peter Travis, because the only real other movie I would recognize him from is Vantage Point, and that is not a good movie.
Did he do Vantage Point before Dredd?
Yes. Dredd was 2012, but it holds up so well, and there's not that much that's involved with making it the great movie that it is. Again, it comes down to Carl Urban, I think.
He's fantastic.
He's so realistic as a Judge Dredd.
But he's so, like, and he said the helmet stays on, but it's like his mouth really sells the emotion of what he's doing.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'm going to probably bring in Mandalorian here again, because we both know.
The helmet on all the time.
The helmet's on all the time, but the voice is what makes the character.
Yeah. It's a fucking brilliant film. I remember seeing it for the first time, and it's a Channel 4 film. They're the ones that, like,
what a shout out that
put a lot of money behind it. Like,
yeah.
So you're saying it's very low budget.
It's low budget,
You won from Game of Thrones as the bad guy. Cersei's the bad guy in it.
Yeah, great mama, you know. Mama, I'm already hinting on, like, bad guys' names or bad women's names in this. And it's like, mama. I was like,
great film.
Shout out to Donald Gleeson as well. And he has a bit of a small part, but he plays his character quite well.
So it's a weird fact that I found out about it actually was there's some great scenes with the bullets going in slow motion.
Yeah.
The sound that they got from making the bullet go slowly is actually a Justin Bieber song slowed down like 100,000 times.
Wow.
Like,
there's a fun fact.
It's the weirdest thing. The sound of the bullet going, weird. Weird fact. But you saw it. You enjoyed the film, obviously.
I'm going to be totally honest. I can't remember if I've seen it from start to finish, but from what I've seen, I remember liking it. I was expecting more of the Raid part than the, like, sci-fi part. Because there's like telekinesis and everything in it, so I wasn't quite expecting that. But I think I'll give it another watch because I think it deserves a fair shake. Because from any account that people have said to me, they're like, Dre is like one of the best sci-fi films ever made. So I do want to give it a proper watch. From what I've seen, I enjoyed enough, yeah.
If I was to give it a rating, based on what Adam said there as well, it is probably one of the best sci-fi movies that has been made.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're basing off that, it's going to be high 9 to 10.
I must look up the budget later on, but look, moving on from then, I'll give you my final streaming recommendation. I feel like maybe a lot of people have seen this, but funny enough, the two guys haven't seen it yet. So But I think this is genius. First of all, it's on Disney Plus, and it's the genius marketing campaign that is the Unstoppable Machine.
It's happened to us all.
Excuse me. Nine bears. That's the Unstoppable Machine that is Disney. They released this on Christmas Day, and they knew exactly what they're doing. We're all in lockdown. Everyone's looking for a bit of an emotional pitch. The film is Soul. If you haven't seen it yet, I love Disney. It's Disney Pixar. Obviously, Disney owns Pixar, and they own fucking everything at this stage.
They own us. I sold us recently to Disney.
I mean, look, if this ever becomes popular, I'll happily sell on and live my life in some sort of luxurious island with beautiful women. But look, Soul, I'm just giving you a quick synopsis. Essentially, he's a jazz teacher. He's been waiting his whole life for his big break to play in a jazz band and really make it, because he loves music, but he's teaching part-time in a school. He gets his big break and he dies. And that's not ruining anything that's in the trailer. He dies and his soul goes up, and he basically decides, it's not my time. I was literally just about, my whole life's purpose was about to come true, and I died. I absolutely blubbered at this film. I have no shame in saying that.
What is this place?
What's your name, honey?
I'm Joe. I teach middle school band. Got it, go for it! Today started out as the best day of my life.
Back here tonight, first show's at 7.
Yes!
Woohoo!
You know what that's gonna say? Joe Gardner! I did it! I got the gig!
Must have been sudden for you.
No, it's the great before.
This is where new souls get their personalities, quirks, and interests before they go to Earth.
Meet 22.
I don't want to go to Earth.
Stop fighting this.
I don't want to.
It's funny. It's, you know, heartwarming, but the message in it, it starts in a different way to the way it ends, is all I can say. I don't want to ruin anything about it, but it gives you this sense of a feeling the first kind of maybe 45 minutes of the film, and then it kind of turns, and then the message at the end of the film is beautiful.
Is it like a spiritual Disney sequel to Coco?
I'm not
ready for that.
it's so much better than Coco.
Coco is amazing.
I still think that, like, you know, in a personal opinion, like, you know, in terms of an overall film, in my favorite Pixar film is The Incredibles. I love The Incredibles. But as far as the emotional point and the overall message that it's trying to hammer home, Soul absolutely nails it. And by the end of the film, I was just gobsmacked. I was like, what a beautiful message. What a beautiful film.
Have you ever seen...
People need to see this. Do you know what I mean?
Inside Out?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That got me.
Another tearjerker.
Yeah.
Disney have done this... Like, they used to... When they started making movies years ago, they were all these horrible tearjerkers, Snow White and Bambi. Then they got a bit more... Even though they're kids' films, they're a bit more kid-friendly in, like, the 90s and stuff, like Aladdin and things like that. But in the last few years, like, Up, Inside Out, Coco, they've gone back to these, like, oh, we're going to... break your heart.
Yeah, and I think they're playing for the older audience.
They really are. Like, when I watched this film, I was like, and like, kids love it. Like, I mean, my cousin's kids have said, like, they absolutely love the film. There's stuff in there for it. And when you're watching it as an adult, maybe that's what you're taking out of it, that you think maybe this isn't for kids. But it's like Inside Out and Coco combined. It's like, it's got this just, and it's such a poignant message. It's really something that, like, speaks to you and really makes you think about yourself. Like, the first 45 minutes of your film, you start, I'm like, you're like, wow, this is heavy stuff. I'm really, like, it's heavy. It's heavy.
Interesting that's the first 45 minutes. Yeah. Usually they leave it to, all right, you know, easy going, few laughs at the start.
But that's the thing, like, the first 45, it's heavy. They make you rethink. You're like, you start thinking about your own life and what you've done with your life and where you've gone and where you're going to go and what's going to happen. And then at the end, they hit you with this uplifting, you know, everything's all right.
Who does the voice?
The ever beautiful Jamie Foxx.
I thought it was, yeah.
What an actor.
Yeah, I love Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx does the voice of the main character, and there's also Moss in the IT crowd.
Oh!
A couple of...
should have led with that. I would have already watched it.
There's, I can't remember her name. She's a New Zealand actress from... Hunt for the Wilder People she's in. There's a lot of recognisable voices in this. You want 30 Rock. She plays Liz Lemon. What's her name?
Tina Fey.
But look, I could go on about this forever. I just think like the reason why I had to put it in, and I'm glad that you two haven't seen this, because if you haven't watched it, I think you need to see this.
It's on the list already to be watched.
I'll be watching over the next couple of days.
10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 out of 10. I left watching that film going, what a beautiful film. Anyway, look, after that bombshell, we'll move on to our next segment, which, look, Adam, I'll let you introduce.
If you guys listen to the first episode, we're making a movie week to week. Again, we have no aspirations this will ever come to anything, but we think it's fun to kind of see if we can riff a film on air, free ball, and better than some writers in Hollywood who actually sit down and write a film, i.e. Hubie Halloween. So first episode, we decided it's going to be a murder mystery. So now we're going to try and pick, we're going to do two things. Ideally, we're going to pick a title for this film. And then secondly, we're going to pick what type of detective we want and who's going to play that detective. And again, we're saying, this is kind of like we have middling money if we were producers. We don't have all the money in the world, but it's not an indie. We have this kind of like low to mid-budget movie that we're going to try to put together. So we'll keep it clever picking a detective, because we're not going to pick, you know, Robert Downey Jr., $20 million a movie. We're going to keep it a bit more down to the ground. So, guys, what do you want to start first? Do you want to get a title for this bad boy out of the way, or do you want to just go straight into who our Poirot is going to be?
Firstly, I'd say all the money in the world. Terrible film.
Oh, awful. Hate it.
I'd say...
And that brings back to Mark Wahlberg being like the worst person in the world.
I think the title will come off... the title will come off the cuff. I don't know, look, it depends on what kind of detective you want it to be. Like, are you looking at your kind of old film, Robert Mitchum, fit, unfit
chest, man? Small body.
Like, I mean, like, the fit... Hit man, race. He's wearing a girdle essentially with his big chest. He's clearly got a gut underneath his trousers that go up to his nipples. Or are you going for more of a, I don't know, Jake Gyllenhaal in Prisoners type detective?
I'd be going for someone near retirement age. Murder mystery. I feel I'd want someone with experience behind them.
Not too old, basically.
Not too old. Like, geez, like
maybe someone.
He's Ghost of Kirk Douglas is our private.
But look, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think, like, maybe they're kind of like not too old, but kind of like, you know, just out of his prime? Like, have you ever seen Sin City?
Yeah.
You know, Bruce Willis's kind of character where he's kind of like, you know, he's got a heart condition, but he's still young enough to kick the shit out of people.
Yeah, I think that would work. And if we're going for like the setting, I think 1940s New York, maybe.
Yeah, it has to be New York or Chicago. It has to be. I think you're right about, like, remember you're saying about the kind of cowboy franchise. We're well overdue a good 40s set crime thriller in the modern day.
Didn't Ben Affleck try to do one a couple of years ago and it was terrible? It was about like bootlegging or something.
Yeah, God,
I don't remember the name of it.
I don't know. Let's probably an actor, brother. Who do you think?
If we're gonna go and kind of like, you know, he's like a grizzled detective. He's been through it all. He's probably fought in wars, and now he's kind of making his money in shady New York. John Malkovich, but not John Malkovich.
Yeah, he's too old now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been in everything.
We were riffing before. Like, I mean, we were saying, like, I think Viggo Mortensen, ideally is a perfect fit for our movie if you're listening. Gogan, I know you were originally, not only did you want not Viggo Mortensen, you were kind of like half in, half out on Mads Mikkelsen, basically, which is like his backup. But you didn't even want Mads Mikkelsen. You wanted the guy from Banshee, Earl Rick Thompson. So if Viggo Mortensen is Coke and Mads Mikkelsen is like Pepsi, then the guy from Banshee is like the Coke you buy from like Albania that's spelled like K-O-K-E. So I think like if you're going to reach for the stars, go for Viggo Mortensen. Well, what's your gripe with Viggo?
I generally can't remember what I did say in it, but I thought it was the guy from Banshee who I was going to go for initially. And then pretty much used to started laughing at the same time, being like, he's just a cheaper little version of Viggo Mortensen. And
then you thought it was Mads Mikkelsen.
And then I thought it was Mads Mikkelsen. So
Mads Mikkelsen's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, to take away from him. But no, careful consideration. Yeah. I went off that time and said, yeah.
I agree with Viggo Mortensen. I think he's the right age still now. If you've ever seen, I know Eastern Promises might have been like 2007, but he's still young enough that he has that kind of, I would say even like a Paul Newman-esque aging factor to him, where you can see that man was a sturdy man in his day and he'd probably still kick the shit out of you now.
I'd be very happy with Viggo Mortensen.
Because I think Mads Mikkelsen's a great actor, but I don't think Mads has mastered the American accent, whereas Viggo I think is originally Danish. Born in Denmark, I think he was, and then he was raised there. Yeah. When he moved to the States young, so he has the American accent down. I think that's pretty much at this rate might be his natural accent. I don't think I've heard an interview with him in a while.
Well, we'll lock Viggo in. And has anyone had, before we move on, does anyone have like a title for this movie? Think 40s New York Viggo Mortensen. What comes to mind?
I think titles seem to come from when you have the script, and like there's only one film that I like that references the name of the film in the film quite prominently, which is Gone Baby Gone. But I don't know. I mean, look, do you have one, Butler? Do you have an idea? I don't know.
Well, it just popped in my head, but this is only because like I don't think this is good, but I think it's like the perfect, if you're alive in the '40s in Hollywood, if you're making a movie, like a PI to our movie. What would this for a title, fellas? Shadow of a Man, starring Viggo Mortensen.
Shadow of a Man. I mean, the only thing is, does that pigeonhole us into a lot of a backstory for
Viggo? Are we looking at Viggo's war history here? Is he having nightmares?
Well, I mean, like, with all those great, like, leading guys, like, they're usually a private detective because something has happened to bring them to that line of work. So, like, a Chinatown or a Maltese Falcon, there's always a bit of a backstory to them.
I would love to call the film something like Blackbird and just leave it at that. And, like, you know, have no explanation to why it's called that. But I'm not saying Blackbird, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know Snake Eyes is also a film by Nicolas Cage, so we can't call it that one.
So we're thinking about 40s back in New York. Any famous sites, that buildings that would have been around back then that we could set a murder based around? Or am I thinking too much into this?
Like the Statue of Liberty. Like what about this? What about this Statue of a Man?
Statue of a Man. Again. I love the way you could add anything to the end of that, couldn't you?
He's in
tears. I don't know. Kitchen of a Man.
Overpriced Taxi of a Man, Viggo Mortensen. What do you mean I gotta pay $12.50 to go uptown? This is ridiculous. This is 1942.
Like I know what avenue you're going down. It's like,
what about, you know, Death at the Empire?
Portrait of a Man. That sounds like an Agatha Christie novel. That's what that sounds like. Portrait of a Man. I like the idea of someone mentioned there like the name of a street or something. If we could pull up the name of a random street.
That's it, I guess.
In New York or in Chicago, I think just that. Like, you know, what's that? Mulholland Drive, like something like that.
There's a station in New York called Jamaica Bay. So what about the Jamaica Bay murders?
That sounds too Jamaican-ish.
Jamaican me crazy, brother.
West 42nd.
I think we have it. I think we're on the right track here.
I think it to be continued on that.
I think to be continued. Yeah. I think I'm going to pull up a list of street names, but I think we can lock in. I think that a street name that sounds right could be the name.
A street name, name desire.
But look, to come back to it, Viggo Mortensen is our locked in actor. So we know it's a murder mystery.
How's your man, Manchi?
It ain't your man, Manchi. The budget has been increased. So. Yeah, next week we can discuss what the title of the movie.
Yeah, and I think we have it pretty much really ready. If we just we're gonna look off air a couple of street names. If you have any suggestions, please go to our Instagram page.
Yes, and finally, to finish up tonight's episode of Rebecca Bay Murders, we're here to give our movie recommendations for the following week. So I'm picking for Gogan this week, and Gogan, I've gone quite broad here. They're all made in the last 20 years, which will help you greatly, I think. There's a bit of variety to them. So your first pick is, and I know you're a big fan of Mel Gibson, so I took this in consideration. I'll read you out the plot synopsis to this film. Condemned to die by crucifixion, Jesus of Nazareth endures the agony of his final 12 hours. It's the Passion of Christ. So that's option number one. Have you ever seen it?
I wish I could actually say I have, so... I couldn't pick it, but no, I haven't seen it.
The second one I have for you is students conspire to prevent a basketball star played by Zac Efron and a shy newcomer played by Vanessa Hudgens from singing a stage production. It's the first High School Musical.
I actually have seen High School Musical. Thank fucking God.
And then the last
the other one that you're doing with your man from Friends.
Again.
17 again.
Yeah, I was like, oh, come on, give me that one. I'm going to pretend I hadn't seen that, but...
And this is a film I really, really like, so I'm giving you a go. The release of his death-ridden pal, played by Edward Norton from jail, spurs a lawsuit with Matt Damon to resume his high-stakes gambling. It's called Rounders, and it's about poker in the underground poker world in New York. It's a great film. Have you seen it, Gogan?
No.
It's a good film.
Yeah, no, that's two movies I haven't seen, so...
All right, one or two, Gogan.
Give me one.
High School Musical 3.
Hands on my heart. Passion of the Christ.
Ah, fuck off. I didn't see any confirmation of numbers being mixed up there. That is ridiculous. I'll watch it.
Bully, you're next. Okay, so the first one. Set in the shadow of the most magical place on Earth, six-year-old Mooney and her two best friends forge their own adventures, while Mooney's struggling mom and a kind-hearted motel manager protect the kids from the harsh reality that surrounds them. It's called The Florida Project. Have you seen it?
No. Willem Dafoe, isn't it?
Yeah, Willem Dafoe. I only watched it recently. I think it only came out last year. Great film. Really, really, really good film. It's almost like you're watching a documentary at times. It's a real kind of...
Yes.
Like poverty in the States. Like a little girl living in a motel. Willem Dafoe is fantastic in it. It's equal parts uplifting and heartbreaking. my second film is telemarketer Cassius Green discovers an alluring method towards success. However, owing to his greed, he ends up fading away from his family and friends.
Oh, sorry to bother you.
It is sorry to bother you. You're really good at this game, Butler.
I've seen it.
You have seen it.
I wanted to really like it, and I get the message. It's a very good message in it. I just found it just a bit too on the artsy side for my taste.
Okay, last film, Butler. If you haven't seen this, you're watching the first one. I don't think you have, because I think we talked about this recently. A legendary bouncer comes to restore order at a notorious bar, but runs afoul of a ruthless crime boss who controls the town. The stage is set for an action-packed showdown.
Roadhouse?
The 1989 classic Roadhouse. Have you seen it?
Parts of it.
Will we leave it in there, or is it a watch that you're willing to...
No, to watch I'll do. I said I've only seen parts of it, but I wouldn't know the plot from start to finish.
I love it, because it makes... being a bouncer into like an art form, like it's almost like an ancient martial art that you've been taught. You know, you're fired because you don't have the temperament you don't understand how people work. You can't do this. He's the world's greatest bouncer. And how you make a film out of that, I don't know, but they did it. Sam Neill's in it. Or Sam Neill. No, that's Jurassic Park. Sam Elliott. Excuse me. Welcome to Roadhouse. excuse me. Sam Elliott, the man with the golden voice, is in it as his like mentor, who he considers the greatest bouncer of all time. It's a brilliant film. It's pure 80s cheese. Or if you want to pick one or two, butter.
One.
Florida Project. Oh, I was really hoping you get Roadhouse.
I'll take it.
Florida Project. Interesting. So that leaves me giving my movies to you there, Ferg.
This will be interesting.
So last time I went war movie related for Adam, and he got Defiance. So
he's less upset about that.
Less said about that, the better, I think. Of three picks here, I'm pretty sure you've seen at least one of them. So it's going to go right into it. Speed.
Absolutely seen it.
Great. Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. I won't waste any time.
Going into it.
Yeah, cracking.
Do you know?
And classic Keanu Reeves.
Oh, classic Keanu Reeves.
And next movie I have is Ronan.
Haven't seen it.
Jean Reno, Robert De Niro, Sean Bean. I'll just give you a quick snapshot of the movie here. Sam, an ex-US intelligence officer, Sam, who's played by De Niro, hires a band of Japanese mercenaries to retrieve a mysterious suitcase to stop falling into the hands of the Russians. Sorry, there's a few more sentences there. I'm just like, there's no need
to. Yeah, I'll leave this out.
Yeah.
Also, again, because a few bits.
That synopsis doesn't really do it justice. It's fucking brilliant. There's one of the best car chases in any action movie you'll see in this.
I've heard that as well, actually. That Ronan and Bullet had the two best car chases ever.
Is it? I remember watching this years ago with my dad, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. It's amazing. A questionable Irish acting woman at one stage as well. Keep an eye on. I won't say anything. Great car chase scene as well. And now we're going to my third movie, Leon.
Leon's a film that I have not watched all the way through. I've seen parts of it and I've either not been in the right frame of mind for it, maybe, or mood for it, or it's been on the telly and I've caught it halfway through and I'm like, it's one of them waiting to kind of sit down and watch, I suppose.
So my answer to that would be, I completely understand what you mean, because I feel like it requires a bit more focus than Ronan. Ronan, you could sit down and I actually can watch it anytime. Hangover.
It sounds like a very me film.
Blockbuster.
I can't believe I haven't seen it.
Leon is a bit different. I've only seen it actually the once as well, and I haven't gone back to it.
Yeah.
But I will go back to it when I am in the mood to watch it. Yeah. So it's when 12-year-old Matilda's, I can't read it at the end of the episode again. No surprise there. So when 12-year-old Matilda's family is killed, her neighbor, Leon, who professional assassin, reluctantly takes her under his wing and teaches her the secrets of his trade. Child is played by Natalie Portman, which I only actually learned today, doing a bit of a synopsis of it, and Gary Oldman. You need to be in the mood to watch it.
Yeah.
But when I watched it was brilliant. I mean,
I'll find the time, definitely, especially for this, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I've numbered them.
Okay. Two.
Roland. Interesting. So there's our picks for next week. Before we go, I suppose we should say that if you do have any feedback that you would like to provide, we are more than happy to listen to.
And that we didn't forget about what our actor of the week would be for next week. If you want to have any input, we're going to put up a little poll. We're going to put a couple of actors/actresses' names. And we're going to put it out on Instagram. So if you look at Instagram, you can have a vote on who is going to be our actor/actress of the week next week.
Perfect.
So
and I think while you're there, give us a follow as well. It's Mama Making Movie Podcast on Instagram. So
you can help us pick a title for our movie. I mean, if it's not Jamaica Bay Birders, then don't even bother about it.
Well, look, guys, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's probably going to be the new year by the time this is out. And look, we'll see you next week.